everybody. I'm Tracy Tucker, and welcome to the Who Is In My Genes podcast, where we share adventures in exploring family trees, including tips for researching your own family tree, stories about discoveries, DNA testing and matches, and lots about adoptee searches and advocacy, because we believe everyone has a right to know who is in their genes. In this episode, I'm going to share my origin story, how I got started in genealogy and exploring family trees. First and foremost, my own trees. Yes, trees with an S. I was adopted at 7 weeks old by Ted and Ginny Tucker. They were no biological relation to me. Part of this story is on my website, so you may have read about this, but I'll put a link to the article in the show notes in case you're interested. About 4 years later, they adopted another baby girl. My sister and I always knew we were adopted, but we never really discussed anything about how it happened or what they may have known about our biological parents or why we were given up. We lived in Barberton, Ohio until the summer before my 10th birthday when we moved to Florida. In Ohio, we had a neighbor, Carl, an older man whose wife, Claire, I remember, but who died when I was young. They had no kids of their own, but my sister and I spent a lot of time at their house. About the most that was discussed about adoption when we were young was when we were at Carl's and we would play adoption agency. We'd line up all the dolls and stuff the animals and whatever else we had. And one of us would be the parents and would look at all the dolls and pick one to adopt. I think that maybe was Carl's way of making us feel chosen. My sister and I would sometimes argue about who our real, air quotes, mothers or fathers were. Usually when we would see someone beautiful or rich on TV, you know, a famous actor or something, and, you know, try to claim them for ourselves. I was a kind of curious child, though. My mother would use a different word, nosy, she would say. But once we moved to Florida, we had this nice, like, two-drawer filing cabinet in the family room that was used as an end table. And when I discovered that it was a filing cabinet and that it wasn't locked, even though there was a locking mechanism on it, at least it wasn't locked whenever I tried to open it. So, of course, whenever I had the chance, meaning when my parents weren't around, I would rifle through it. At some point, I found a folder on my adoption, and it included a very delicate, somewhat transparent sheet of paper with typing on it. And it had some details on it about my biological parents, their ages, physical descriptions, ethnicity, schooling, hobbies, no names, of course, and no information about their relationship with each other or why I was given up or anything. But I'll put an image of that on my socials if you want to check it out. So fast forward to the mid-2000s when my son was young. I started thinking about ways to find out who I really was. I got connected to a search angel who took all my information, everything I knew, and then she gave me a list of baby girls who could have been me based on where and when they were born. And knowing the ethnic descriptions that the little piece of paper I had found had provided me with as a child, which was a Scotch, Dutch, Irish mother and a father of Macedonian descent. Yeah, pretty specific, right? The list that search angel gave me had 11 names on it, but none of them really, you know, called to me and said, hey, that's, you know, definitely me. And that's about everything I had from when I was born in 1967 until early 2015 when I was 47 years old. So what happened in 2015? Well, a couple of different things. First, in 2014, the state of Ohio, where I was born and adopted, passed a bill to open the adoption records of people born and adopted there between 1964 and 1996. Once that bill was passed, biological parents who had given a child up for adoption were given 1 year to send in a form to have their names redacted from the original birth certificate. There's actually an article on my website about what each U.S. state's laws are regarding accessing those birth certificates, and I'll put a link in the show notes. A little side note here on birth certificates. For most people who are adopted, the birth certificate they have with their adopted parents on it is their second modified birth certificate. Everyone, when born in the United States since the 1930s, gets a birth certificate that has at least their birth mother's name on it, and then any name the birth mother may have given the baby. The father's name may or may not be on it, and in my experience, most birth certificates for babies given up for adoption do not include the father's name, which does not have to legally be on the birth certificate. So draw your own conclusions as to why they may or may not be named on the birth certificate. So when a baby or child is legally adopted, a new birth certificate is created with the names of the adoptive parents and whatever name they choose to give to the baby or child, which could be completely different and is often completely different from the name the baby has had since their birth. The adoptive parents may not even know what the child's name was on their what is called original birth certificate or OBC. So back to 2014 in Ohio, when biological parents were given 1 year to have their name redacted from the original birth certificate. After that 1 year time period, adult adoptees could request their OBC and indeed their adoption file if there was one. If the bios listed on the OBCs redacted, then when that adoptee got a copy of their OBC, the name would be blacked out. Disappointing for adoptees, but I'll discuss that in a future episode. In my case, I waited that year on pins and needles, right? I knew that as soon as I was able to, I'd request my records. My adoptive parents, Ted and Ginny, had both died in 2013, so even though I was an adult, I was an orphan after all. My son, who was a teenager at the time, was the only biological relative I'd ever had, which made him even more precious to me than he already was as my son and only child. Today, as an adult, he's still my person, and I hope he always will be. As the time for the records in Ohio to become available got closer, I filled out all the paperwork and got it ready. It couldn't be mailed until a certain date. I think it was opening day, but I had everything ready. And I also was following a page on Facebook for the Adoption Network Cleveland, which was pivotal in getting the bill passed. So Adoption Network Cleveland was on their Facebook was counting down to opening day, which was to be Friday, March 20th. The day the records were unsealed for 400,000 adoptees who were born and adopted in Ohio between 1964 and 1996. Yeah, 400,000 people. Some of those people included Ohio State Senator Dave Burke, who was born the same year I was, and who was one of the bill's sponsors, and others who testified during the bill's hearings. If you go to the Adoption Network Cleveland Facebook page, which is still live, and go to their posts from March 2015, you'll see tons of stuff from opening day, leading up to opening day, and then after opening day. You'll see photos of people waiting in lines around the block at the courthouses. I'm starting to get choked up. Waiting to get their records. Whew. You'll see tons of news stories about it. You'll see interviews of people waiting in those lines to get their files. And then stories, and more stories about the people who did get their records and what happened afterwards. It's been 10 years and look, I'm still crying about it. So I'll put a link to the Adoption Network Cleveland Facebook page in the show notes. And I just want to say how grateful I am to them and all the hard work they did to make that happen. So on opening day, I mailed my own paperwork from Florida. And I had no idea how long it would take for my records to come back, but the expectation was that it could be pretty quickly, as Ohio said they were going to fill requests as fast as possible. So in the meantime, I did a couple other things. One, I posted on my Facebook a contest asking my friends to guess what my birth name might have been. I couldn't tell you now what the guesses were, but I can tell you none of them were right. Two, I was talking with someone, I can't remember who it was now, about this whole thing, and they asked me if I had taken an ancestry DNA test. I said, what? Oh my God, why didn't I think of that? Why haven't I done that? Duh. So, of course, I immediately ordered one. I got the DNA kit, and I sent my tube of spit back to Ancestry. Then, one afternoon, less than 2 weeks after opening day, I went to the mailbox and found a letter from Ohio. I dropped everything I had in my hands, the rest of the mail, etc., on the ground, and I tore that envelope open right there in the yard. I could not wait. And there in my hot little hands was my original unredacted birth certificate. So yes, it had my biological mother's name on it and the name she gave me. Any guesses before the reveal? No? You can call me Samantha. Yep, my mother had named me Samantha, which I love, by the way. Her name was also on the OBC, but no father's name. Shocked, right? So after picking up all the stuff I had dropped in the yard, I went inside and I cried for a little while. So I now knew my birth mother's name and the name she had given me. And I went and dug out the list of 11 names from years before that search angel had given me. And guess what? I was the second name on the list. And then I cried a little more because I had had that information for years with no idea how to figure it out. So I had not really decided, at least consciously, what I was going to do with this information. In fact, now, when I am talking with adoptees who are thinking about searching or taking a DNA test, I tell them they don't need to decide what they're going to do with that information. But if they think they want it, the sooner they act, the better. As the longer you wait, the more your options may narrow. People age and die. Records are lost in moves, floods, and fires, and memories dim. So get the information you can and decide what, if anything, you're going to do with that information later. Well, I had not decided what to do, but just a few minutes after learning my birth mother's name, I started searching in Ancestry and Googling. After a few days, I thought I had tracked her down. I learned what her married name was and found an address in Ohio. So what'd I do? I wrote a letter and mailed it. Man, that was nerve-wracking. About a week later, the letter came back. Bad address. So I did some more Googling and discovered that it seemed they had moved to a different state. So I sent the letter again to that address. About that time, my Ancestry DNA results came back. And holy moly, did I have relatives. No parent or sibling matches, but some possible first cousins. And today, I have a total of more than 47,000 DNA matches. Yeah, 47,000 people who share DNA with me. After knowing zero for most of my life, and then only one, my own son, I now have more than 47,000 biological relatives. I have to laugh. It is shocking and amazing. I'm not going to get into the whole reunion with my mother now, but the short of it is that we eventually connected and I discovered I also have a maternal half-sister and brother and a nephew. And we're all in touch now, and my mother has told me the story of my conception and adoption. And my mother, sister, and brother and I have all gotten to know each other a little bit, and we have little things in common, which is very cool for an adopted person to find out. My mother and I enjoy being artsy and doing puzzles and reading science fiction. And my sister and I both work in marketing and love animals and rescue dogs and make up songs that we sing to our pets. And we do puzzles too and write. And my brother and I play instruments. We're in band in high school, as was his son, my nephew, and also love reading and drawing. My mother wanted to teach and did so by working at the local library teaching arts and crafts classes to kids. And my brother was a teacher and then a school administrator. And my son followed me and my sister into marketing, but he's also a basketball coach. And I think that's from his teaching gene. After my son met my sister for the first time, he said, "Mom, it's amazing how much you two are alike." And I made him explain that because I wanted to hear all the similarities he saw in us. So what about my birth father? My mother didn't give me a name. She just said that she didn't know for sure what his name was because she felt the name he had given her was not his real name. But maybe she didn't remember his last name. I don't know. She's in her 80s now, so I really don't like push it. But using my Ancestry DNA results and the potential two first cousin matches I had that I felt were on the paternal side, I started building a family tree and sent a message to one of the cousins. I'm going to talk in a future episode about how I figured out they were on the paternal side. The short version of this story is that as soon as I said where I was born and when, and that my biological father was of Macedonian descent, my cousin was like, "Ah, yes, yep, you're a cousin." And after talking it through with him and his sister, we came to the conclusion that my father must have been their mother's youngest brother. There were four brothers in the family. But the youngest one matched the age and the physical description from that little piece of paper I had found when I was a kid, and he was in the right place at the right time. And he died 3 years later in 2018 before ever speaking with any of us about me, despite our trying. And more than 2 years ago now on Ancestry, I had a surprise. I had a new match who turned out to be another daughter of my father's that he didn't know about, who's just 2 months older than me. Yeah, 2 months older than me. This paternal half-sister and I are now in touch also, and she has kids and grandkids. So as of today, I have an adopted sister, a maternal sister and brother, and a paternal sister, and some nieces and nephews and great nieces and nephews. Amazing. In between all this new family meeting, I started building my mother's and father's family trees. Nearly all those 47,000 DNA matches in ancestry are from my mother's side, as many of my ancestors on that side immigrated to America pretty early on and now have thousands of descendants, especially the Underwoods and the Hatfields. Yes, I'm a Hatfield. My father's parents, though, were the immigrants on his side, who came from Macedonia in the early 1900s, first to Johnstown, Pennsylvania, where they got married, and then to the Akron, Ohio area. I did get the names of their parents, my great-grandparents, from their social security applications, but after that, brick wall. Then last year, another surprise. I matched to a couple of young ladies in Macedonia on my heritage. My DNA is everywhere. And side note, the legal name of the country now is North Macedonia, but don't call it that to a Macedonian. Sore subject. Luckily for me, these two matches speak English. So we messaged a few times and then figured out that my grandfather, who emigrated from Macedonia, was their great-grandmother's brother. So my grandfather was their great-granduncle. Their grandfather had initially kept in touch with my grandfather, but then they lost contact, and the family in Macedonia wondered what had happened to uncle who had gone to America. So I told them everything I knew, and we are all very happy to know of each other. They've sent me photos of family still in Macedonia and have invited me to visit anytime, as I've never been there. One of my cousins is a professional Macedonian tour guide, if you can believe it. How convenient, right? She has a Facebook page for her tour business and posts photos and videos from all over Macedonia, which I love to see. I really hope to go there one day. I'll post a link to the page in the show notes. So I mentioned at the beginning of the episode that I was building family trees with an S. So far I've mentioned my birth mother's and father's trees. In another episode, I'll discuss my own trees. Three, my adopted mother Ginny's tree. Tree four, my adopted father Ted's tree. And five, my son's paternal tree. After working on my biological trees, I started having questions about people I visited as a child with my adopted parents. And instead of wondering who they were and how they were related to my parents, such as, you know, Aunt Fern and Miss Micah, I decided to figure it out. So in one of those episodes, I'll talk about them, and I'll also talk about how I may be biologically related to my adopted mother's brother-in-law, who has a surname in his family tree that I also have in mine. So how was this my origin story? It is literally my origin, as in how I came to be. But it's also how I came to be obsessed with family trees, family history research, history in general to some degree, which I couldn't stand when I had to study it in high school, and now I wish I had paid more attention to. And how I became a fierce advocate for adoptee rights. After being a marketing professional nearly all my career, in 2023, I retired from marketing and became a professional genealogist, helping others build their family trees and make discoveries, and also analyzing DNA matches to help adoptees and others who have surprising DNA test results figure out what the heck is going on, where they came from, who they are, and who is in their genes now that I know who is in my genes. Thank you for listening to the Who Is In My Genes podcast with me, Tracy Tucker. If you enjoyed it, please give us a great review to help others find the show and follow us to get notified of new episodes. Visit us online at whoisinmygenes.com for all the ways we can help you find out who is in your genes, and follow us on Instagram for the images we mention in the show. Links are in the show notes. Join us next week for a new episode of Adventures in Exploring Family Trees.